Captain America has America's ass. That's all I'm gonna say.
Incoming transmission. Engage house party protocol. Mark 4 powering up. Mark 17 powering up. Mark 44 powering up. All suits are online. Welcome to house party protocol.
Welcome to another episode of House Party Protocol. I'm Greg.
And I'm the Hodor of this podcast, Will.
And tonight we've got a pretty loaded web episode for you guys. We're going to be talking about Dr. Octopus. We're going to be talking about Spider-Man and their rules. Additionally, we're going to be talking about some rules that I know that you guys have asked for some explanations on. But first, I think Will wants to talk about the live streams that happened from Team Covenant, which sounds super important. We're going to have a conversation about that. But before we even get into that stuff, have you played any games lately, Will?
You know what? I actually have. I played a game of Guild Ball lately, and I lost. I lost. I know. Sad. Cry for me. But it was a good game. It was against my friend Andrew. And I was trying some new stuff, so not to take any credit away from him, but, you know, I was very much in the test mode because we have a tournament we're going to in 3 weeks. So, yeah, I was like, all right, I need to test this stuff out to see if I want it. And let me just say, Siren is killing me. Anybody that listens to Guild Ball or knows Guild Ball will know what I'm saying. You're killing me, girl. You're just killing me right now. I can't use you.
Yeah, you know, you said Siren, and I thought we were going to have another mutant conversation and then have to reset the clock already.
I think we just did.
Oh, shit.
There you go. Every time, reset the clock.
You know, and I've actually played some games myself, but again, they've just been video games. I haven't really been interested in some of the miniature games that I have access to right now just because I don't have a ton of time, and a lot of these games take up to 3 hours to play.
Ooh.
And that's another reason why, yeah, another reason why I'm looking so forward to Marvel Crisis Protocol so I can finally get some quick games of something in.
You say quick, but as we'll see when we talk about these Covenant streams, those first few games are not going to be so fast.
I mean, I do have a bit of an advantage in that I do have years of gaming experience, but additionally, I think when we get into that conversation with about Team Covenant's streams, I think we're going to see maybe some difference of opinions on how that's going to go. But, you know, that's okay. That's a conversation for later in the episode. First, though, we have to do House Party Protocol Deathmatch. And we have kind of, a themed one for our episode tonight, and it's who would win in a fight between Spider-Man, Tom Holland, Tobey Maguire, or Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. And so, I'm actually really interested in how you feel about this.
Well, here's the question. Is it who would win in a fight between literal Tom Holland, literal Tobey Maguire, or literal Andrew Garland?
That's definitely an interesting conversation for another time.
I think Tobey Maguire is a sneaky fuck and would seriously mess them up. Just me.
I mean, we'll just stick with your opinion for now for the actual people, but let's talk about the characters themselves and who's Spider-Man's probably the best of them. And I don't know where your answer is on this one, because I think my answer is going to surprise people. What about you?
I mean, well, now that you said your answer might surprise people, I feel like our answers might line up. I would say probably Tobey Maguire Spider-Man would win. And here's why. One, he doesn't have to worry about refilling his webs. His suit is literally just suit. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's just material. He doesn't have to worry about like fancy parts and stuff like that, right? And he always has natural webbing, you know. He seems, from the way he's portrayed in the movies in his trilogy, to be the strongest one that we've seen on screen, like the strongest version of Spider-Man, I think. You know what I mean? Like stopping the subway in Spider-Man 2 and all that. Like, that was pretty legit. And then, I don't know, he's just, I just think he would win because I think he wants it more.
and you know, I think a good conversation to have when you're talking about these three is it's actually the Peter Parker personas, because who I think we both agree that Andrew Garfield probably played the least believable Peter Parker, because the dude is way too attractive to have ever been a nerdy dude that you just don't see him as being ever Peter Parkerable.
Right. And at the same time though, he was also 30 playing a high schooler, so that was also not believable.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Tobey Maguire, when he did Spider-Man, I think he was in his late 20s too. So I don't think he was that much younger, though. Well, that's fair, yeah, because he's got that fresh faced look that is never really going to age.
Right, exactly.
But I do think you have to go with the Peter Parker that really shows up as that gritty. I mean, not gritty as in like Batman gritty, but as in the guy who's never going to say die, who always gets back up. And if we were talking about Spider-Man, including the voice actor for what's his name from the Spider-Verse, he might get the leg up. But sticking to the live action MCU/Sony movies, I really have to give the edge to Toby too.
What?
And I know it's specifically because of his portrayal of Peter Parker, because I think he, outside of the third movie, because that's a garbage of a train wreck of a movie, I think he did show just the qualities that made Peter Parker transition into a Spider-Man better than the other two. In addition with the, because I think Tom Holland's probably right behind him with that, but in addition to the genetic advantages that he has as far as his, like his thwipping, and that his costume is just a costume.
Right.
There's a caveat to that. If we have to base it off of all versions of those characters, and you use Far From Home's Iron Spider suit, or Endgame's Iron Spider suit, you might have to throw that edge at Tom Holland.
Well, yeah, if you throw that bullshit in there, but you know, we're not
right.
You know, I'm saying
no, we're not going to do that.
Just Spider-Man in Spider-Man form as Spider-Man, and Toby gets it, in my opinion. But yep. I agree with you that Tom Holland, like as Tom Holland's been presented in the MCU, he has a Peter tingle, but he doesn't have a spider sense. You know what I mean? Like as you would think. So like Tobey Maguire had spider sense. You know what I mean? It was very obviously shown on screen how his spider sense worked. So
that's true, because you did have that sound, like the way that the music just suddenly did that little like violin screechy sound,
right?
Whenever it was like popping up. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, I think you're right. He did exhibit all the traits of Spider-Man better than the other two,
right?
And that's probably just a choice of directing or writing or something. But I think this might surprise people, but I think Tobey Maguire was the best Peter Parker / Spider-Man. At least true to the comic book origins.
Yeah, I mean, I liked him a lot. I think that they presented a very comic booky version of Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, and it was very enjoyable. And Tobey Maguire wins because, you know, he's badass.
Yeah, I agree. Now, that's not to say that I liked the movies, because as we've talked about before, I did not like the second movie.
You're batshit crazy for that. I'm sorry.
I know, which is fine, but I really do think as far as overall movies, if we're going to just compare movies, I think it's a close battle between Tom Holland and Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. I think as far as movies go, Tom Holland's Spider-Man movies are better, but again, Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man is better than Tom Holland's Spider-Man, better than Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man.
Yeah, well, Spider-Man 2 is still the best Spider-Man movie, so there you go. I win, you're done.
Well, that is the end of the death match, guys, but we always want to hear from you on what you'd like to see as a death match or what your opinions are. You can always reach us on Discord. I'm HPP Greg, he's HPP Will if he ever decides to respond. And you can also reach us on Facebook, because which is House Party Protocol. Reach us there too, because Will really does respond almost instantly, maybe not instantly, but close enough that you won't notice.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely. And send us emails. We've been getting a lot of messages from you guys lately, which is really good, because it's nice to know that you guys are listening. But keep them coming, because we want to keep improving and keep making things easier for you guys to listen to us.
Yeah, do that. Do the thing with stuff. Click the button. Type the things.
Do the thing and stuff. But now I'm really interested to actually get into some of the meat of this tonight, because I hadn't had a chance to look at the Covenant stuff, and you have, but it did bring up a question that we had talked about a little bit before this episode started recording, and I'm really keen on your perspective on it. So why don't you take us to that and tell us about how the Covenant streams went?
So anyone out there that is not familiar, there's a YouTube streaming channel, Facebook Live. They do it all on all that stuff. It's called Team Covenant. They have a store in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They do online stuff. Anyway, support your local gaming shop. But if you don't want to support your local gaming shop for whatever reason, or you don't have one, they're a good option.
They do offer a subscription service, so that way you never have to do like individual orders for models. So if you do have to order online because you're in a small location, you can sign up for a subscription service for their models and get them coming out to you regularly instead of having to like remember to order them.
Right. So the way that Covenant subscription thing works is you pre-order it basically, and it'll just ship when it's ready immediately, but it won't affect any other stuff. Anyways, right. That's neither here nor there. They're a good company. Check them out. They do a lot of streaming, and they have a lot of good videos and stuff out there. They're worth watching. But they did a six-hour play and game day, basically. It was basically 6 hours of live streaming. They broke it up into chunks, thank God. But it was basically 6 hours of live streaming for Marvel Crisis Protocol. And the game, it looks exactly like you would think. It looks fun. It looks awesome. It looks great on the tabletop because the Time of Mass Games sent them a painted copy, which has got to be awesome. It's not what you know, it's who you know, kids. Anyways, they were completely new to the game and playing the game. And watching them learn the game was very interesting. And one of the things that they did that I thought was great was the first game they played, it took them a while, but they only played with two characters each on a smaller board with just a few pieces of terrain instead of a bunch of terrain. And I thought that was really cool because it took some of the tactics, you know, some of the team tactic cards. They didn't even use those. They didn't even use a crisis card. It was just a straight brawl. And I guess the only criticism I have of that is the game never came to a resolution. It was just kind of them fighting back and forth at each other. And they were just like, okay, we've been playing for 5 rounds now. Let's just stop. And then we'll incorporate more stuff on the next thing. And that's what they did. But I thought that let's talk about that first one, Greg, with this particular thing. Like, do you think that way they did that, like playing the game on a smaller scale, was a good way to teach it or / learn it?
So it's kind of a mixed bag because the game is so intrinsically scenario driven. If you're going to do that and you're going to play with fewer characters, I think you should just stick with the quick play rules, because at least the quick play rules will automatically have you set up the game board in such a state as to make it accessible for newer players. Even if you only use one or two characters to do that, at least then you're creating an alternative win condition other than just beating the crap out of each other, because if you choose the wrong characters to do that with, it could end up being a snore fest, and that's not a good way to represent a game.
I could see that, but I mean, if I'm setting up a demo at the store, at my local store, right, and I'm sitting there with models on the table, and I'm trying to entice people that have never played this game to come in and get a quick 20-minute demo, what do I want to do? Do I want to say, and hey, what you really got to do is go sit your model on that point over there? No, what I want to do is I want to bring them in and say, okay, here's Captain America and Captain Marvel and Iron Man, or whatever number of characters, 2, 3 characters, whatever. On one side, Captain America has 3 power already. Iron Man has 4 power. Captain Marvel has 2 power, you know, and then you got Red Skull, Dr. Octopus, and Ultron on the other side, and each of them has a varying degree of power. All right, you're in the middle of a fight. What do you do? What do you want to do? You know what I mean? Like, I think that is a quick and easy way.
That's how it should be. I agree with you. And I think that's how that should work. But they have a demo setup that does that already. And that's the one that they used at, like, Nova and Gen Con.
Well, see, I didn't see those. So...
No, that's fair. And so I think that's why it's going to be important, if you're going to demo this game, that you either reach out through the store that you're going to be demoing at and see if they can't get you a demo kit even if it's not the action figures themselves, but the if it's not the figurines themselves, at least the demo instructions, so that way you can make a proper demo setup for your store or for yourself, just so you can demo the game properly.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because Asmodee or AMG just put out a thing on Facebook the other day saying, hey, contact your local store, because Asmodee is going to be giving out demo copies of the game. So it sounds like that stores are going to have access to the game earlier than retail, so that way when the time comes, when retail drops, they can have a little bit of a leg up. It's what it sounds like anyways from that post they made on Facebook.
Yeah, which would be an interesting conversation if we could get some more confirmation on that. So, hey guys at AMG, if you're listening and you've got anything that you want to any additional information you'd like to supply us, please let us know, because we want to make sure that the listeners out there are getting all this information too, and it's accurate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey guys, I did want to take a minute to talk about something that's important to both Will and I. Whether you're converting an abandoned subway car into your new mad science laboratory, or you need a new cityscape for Spider-Man to swing through, the topic of terrain has been all over Discord and Facebook lately. And with our new partner at Blacksite Studios, they're going to be letting us give you guys 15% off with our new promo code, HousePartyFifteen. Now, they have pre-painted terrain, and they offer two great bundles. They have Arclight Metro, which is great as a underground subway station, and it comes with awesome pre-painted terrain and decals to give it a little extra flair. They also have a Midnight City, which is great, again, if you have Spider-Man or you just want to have a city rumble in the park or with a bunch of buildings. These are both great, but they're already bundled with savings. So with our House Party 15 code, you're going to get 15% off any order with individual pieces.
Exactly. House Party 15, like Greg said, individual pieces of some great terrain. I love this stuff. I know Greg loves it. I can't wait to show you guys once I get the stuff in. It's going to be awesome. Yeah, back to the show. Anyways, well, so Zemo does work, and Cap is hard to kill, and we're going to talk about Captain America and Crossbones on our next episode, and Nate from the Gamers Guild is going to be joining us in that conversation, so, you know, spoiler alert, it's going to be good.
It's going to be super good.
Anyways, Crossbones did more than I thought he would in their little scenarios that they had. Crossbones was pretty potent. Baron Zemo was exactly like what you would think Baron Zemo would do, is just moving around the board like crazy and using his strategic genius ability. They used it all the time. Mm-hmm. All the time.
That's a great ability.
Yeah. And, you know, they got stuff wrong. Like if you go back and you watch the streams, they get stuff wrong and whatnot. And that's okay. You know, you're going to do that in your games too. I'm going to do it in my games when I get to play it. It's just there are going to be things that are going to be done wrong. And, you know, you just got to learn from it, you know. And one of the things I also noticed, like, Spider-Man did more work than I thought he would, but at the same time, he wasn't super useful. And as we're going to talk about later, Spider-Man at Threat 4 just seems too much to me. Seems too much.
We'll talk about how I kind of disagree with that, but it all depends on how you use the character and whether what you're you know, with most of these characters, it depends on how you're using them, whether or not it's the intended purpose of the character, right? Mm-hmm. But like that's interesting that you talk about Crossbones like that, because a lot of people are really saying he's garbage as a character. So it's nice to see him actually do some work that people aren't really expecting him to do.
Yeah, he was really survivable, which I guess is what you would expect. But it just he just did more. I just didn't expect him to be as good as he was. But you also have to take into consideration they were playing on that smaller board, so he was able to get there a little better. You know, so that's a big knock against him, is his ability to get up the board is difficult. But it's really entertaining to watch. They did a good job there. If you are interested in the game, it was a good way to see kind of what it's going to be like for your first few play experiences. And they played, you know, they were throwing terrain around, which was cool, and throwing characters around, and they definitely made the Hulk look fun, and like, of course he's fun. We talked about that on the last one. Like, I think the Hulk is going to be a ton of fun in this game. So yeah, I mean, overall, I think it was just a really entertaining stream. And as someone who is absorbing and going out and finding as much content as I possibly can about this game right now, it was just awesome. You know what I mean?
Sure. So speaking of that then, because, you know, you and I sometimes have a different desire that we want to have out of content. Do you feel like, based off of their experiences, that the game seems to have that more competitive feel, or does it have that more casual feel like the guys at AMG kind of suggested the game was going to have?
So it's interesting that you asked that question, because they actually addressed this on the stream, is that they feel like that it's not as casual as I think you and I feel. I think you and I feel like that it will be it seems to be a very casual oriented game. Get people into miniatures game type game. And while I do feel that way after watching them play a little bit more and them talking about it, I do have to agree that I think that there is a lot more depth here. Maybe, like, we've talked about this before, right, Craig? Like, there is depth. We've seen that there is depth here. But seeing the game more makes me just kind of get what they're going for more. And I do think that AMG knows what they're doing. They know what they're doing, and they're going to have a good game that will have some competitive legs. You know what I mean? Like,
good.
I think that there's a little bit much on some of the cards. You know what I mean? Like, and that's, I think that some of the cards, and when you have a squad of, you know, if you have five models, or potentially you could fit six, if you have a 17 threat thing, I think you can get six models in an Avengers list because of Black Widow.
Right.
But that, I mean, that's a lot to keep track of. And there's a lot of innate abilities and leadership abilities that you have to keep track of with that kind of stuff. So I think that the game will have legs competitively, but casually speaking, there's going to be things missed on a turn by turn basis. You're going to say, oh crap, remember a turn ago I had this ability, I used this thing, and I totally forgot about it, this other thing that would have made it better. You know what I mean? Like, that happens. I've been playing Guild Ball forever now, for over a year now, and I do that on some stuff. But the difference with Guild Ball versus this game, in Guild Ball, a team can have 14 or 16 models, something like that, but you're only ever going to have on the pitch at one time six. And within that 14, there's really only a handful that are viable given a strategy that you're going for, right? So,
sure.
Knowing your characters from a competitive perspective is going to be so important. And I feel like that this game, there's a little bit much with the attacks and stuff like that at the top of the card, followed by the superpowers, followed by the leadership ability if you have one active, which you should always have one active, followed by the tactic cards. You know what I mean? And the thing about the tactic cards, which they utilized a little later, is the tactic cards can lead to kind of gotcha moments, which can be enjoyable, and can, what Atomic Mass envisions, and I agree with this, is it can create a very cinematic moment. But at the same time, from a competitive perspective, it's like, man, that can be frustrating.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no, I think I agree with a lot of that information that you just provided. I think that because the way that they created the rules, they were able to put more on the card. And I think that over time, as the game progresses, you're going to see more repetition on the cards as opposed to just how different they seem now, because there's so few models. So I think that's just a matter of time for people to get familiar with that. And usually when you have a game, especially a miniature game, and you're introducing new players, you're going to have, like, what Guild Ball has as pundits and War Machine used to have as the press ganger core, where you're going to have a group of people who are going to be able to bring you into this and make it seem more approachable than maybe the cards suggest that the game is now. Because if you ask me, I think the cards are even more simplistic than a lot of the other games that use a card as well as just rules in a book.
I think I can agree with that. Yeah,
I think that's opinion.
I mean, it is simplistic from a lot of other games. I mean, it's I keep making this comparison, and it's because it's what I know. So if somebody else has another comparison, feel free to hit us up and let us know. But what I know is Guild Ball. And when I compare MCP to Guild Ball, it's comparable in terms of complexity level, I think. I think that one of the things I really loved about Crisis Protocol and all the times I've watched it played is I love competing dice because it makes a much more engaging and entertaining engagement with both players when you're rolling competing dice versus just going for a target number.
Yeah, agreed.
You know what I mean? They had multiple moments on that stream where like Hulk was rolling like 8 dice and just totally whiffed on the attack. You know what I mean? That's not going to happen all the time, but at the same time, you can just kind of envision like him trying to punch someone and then ducking out of the way real quick or something. Like, I don't know, but you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff's going to happen, and dice are crazy, so you can make the right play logically, but dice can be out of control. But I think that stuff's kind of fun, and I really especially love the competing dice. I just, it sucks because you have a great roll, and then your opponent has a great defensive roll, and you're like, ah, dang it. Darn you,
yeah, but those
you
are the times where you can still see that cinematic in your mind, like where you have Thor smacking Captain America, but he hits the shield as opposed to hitting Captain America, and you can just imagine that scene. And was it Civil? No, no, it wasn't.
That's
Civil
Avengers, the first Avengers. Avengers in the first Avengers movie. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. When you have all three of them fighting together, and then poof, bam, you know that's an amazing cinematic moment, and you can still get those in your head even when you completely whiff a roll because of a situation like that. And I think that's great, which is great because we were both really curious as how other people were going to see the game flows, and at least it's still showing that the game really does have a lot of those cinematic moments, whether they're whiffs or whether or not they have a lot of power behind the attack and it just goes off like you want it to.
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting, and to bring it back to that competitive discussion a little bit, I think that one of the things that this game's going to be interesting to see from a competitive perspective, like I don't think we're going to see a real big competitive scene build around this game until it's been out for maybe 6 months. Just because I feel like people are going to want more characters and want to do more stuff. But once that competitive scene gets going, I'm really interested to see kind of the characters that are used in that competitive environment.
Sure.
And like how I had a thought and it's gone now, but poop. It'll come back later.
Yeah, no, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, the meta, like, because that's a word that gets thrown around in games like this all the time.
Right.
Like the meta game, which is where, you know, for those who maybe never played a miniature game or a game that has that phrase in it, it's the overall themes or characters that seem to be being played at a competitive level. And you'll see we'll get into that more as the game progresses and the competitive scene does start to take off, because, you know, that's something that I'm interested in and something that Will's interested in, and at least on a
on a casual level. Yeah, I mean I am interested in that competitive level. I mean, just, you know, probably not as much as you are, but I don't know, I think it's gonna be interesting because with all the characters that are coming out and this game, you know, right now they have releases planned for quite a while. So
in fact, some more just popped up on their website with the Asgardians and the Vision and Winter Soldier pack.
Yeah, exactly. So, interestingly enough, so did you notice that those packs are labeled like 12 and 11, but 10 is missing, and 10 was supposed to be Spider-Gwen and Miles Morales?
Yeah, don't break my heart any more than it is. And I'm sure that's probably just a production thing, or maybe it just got out of cycle. You know, sometimes that happens where they have like the demos and everything else is ready, but the miniatures haven't been sent over from production yet, or maybe there was a problem with the cast.
Yeah, who knows?
It just happens sometimes, which doesn't really surprise me. It doesn't upset me, but it does kind of make me a little bit sad because you know how excited I was for the Spider-Verse after Wakanda, and that seemed to be what we were going to get.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
But that's okay.
We digress.
That's okay, because I do... Yeah, we obviously want to tie it back together again, and going back to competitive and whether the game feels like it's going to be competitive, I think we both agree that it's going to be competitive, or at least have the legs to do that. but we're going to see a lot of that casual play until the competitive scene develops naturally, because that's usually what happens. But in order to help both casual players and competitive players, part of what we need to do is make sure that we're understanding the rules correctly. And it sounds like there was some concerns over rules on the Covenant streams, but they might not be the ones we're going to go over tonight. Because tonight we're going to go over just a few rules that we know we've heard a lot of questions about, right?
That's right. And these are actually a couple of the rules that they had some problems with as well.
Yeah, and especially cover, which I think is going to be the first rule we're going to go over tonight, because it's the one that a lot of people seem to get wrong a lot. And that's understandable, because when it comes to cover and line of sight in this game, a lot of people seem to be using them interchangeably, and they're not.
Right. I do think that you can't talk about cover without talking about line of sight, but I do agree with you, and this was a thing I noticed in the stream, is that the wording is overlapping when it shouldn't be. And
right.
The rule specifically for cover says this. This is page 25 of the rule book. It's very, very right at the very top. If you're on the PDF, it's page 27, but that's 25 of the rule book. So cover. Terrain features can provide cover to characters that hide behind them. There are a number of requirements that must all be met in order for a defending character to benefit from cover. First, the defender must be within range 1 of a terrain feature of the same size or larger. 2, a straight line can be drawn from any portion of the attacker's base to any portion of the defender's base through that terrain feature. That terrain feature. Isn't it? I'm emphasizing that specifically because this is what tripped me up. 3, the attacker is not within range 2 of the defender. During the modified dice step of an attack, a defending character benefiting from cover may change the result of one defense die to a block. So if you get a hit, a blank, whatever, it can become a block. So, Greg, let's talk about this. Because you and I had a conversation about this. I hate the way this rule's written a little bit, personally.
That's fair. And I think the first place we're going to start with this rule specifically is going to be within the first specific bullet point. The defender must be within range 1 of a terrain feature of the same size or larger. The first thing that you have to keep in mind is that within range 1. So within means you can be on the terrain feature as well, because you're still going to be within range of something if you're on it.
Yeah, but that's stupid.
And a lot of people seem to be forgetting it. We're right. and that's because a lot of games, especially if you're coming from a game like War Machine or Hordes or
40K.
Warhammer.
Yeah, 40K, exactly. It's true line of sight.
Yep, and the other thing is that there's something that's called completely within and within in those games. And completely within means that all of your base must be within that terrain feature in order for it to count, whereas within doesn't say that at all. It just has to be within range 1.
So the tiniest little micro part of the base.
Right, exactly, which means, but in this case, this game is very specific about terrain features in that you cannot be on it unless you're completely on it.
Like I was completely on your mom last night.
It's a true story. I've got pictures. You can see them on our Facebook page.
Oh, stop it. Oh, stop it. Don't revenge porn me. Don't you be doing that.
No, that's fair. But it's really important that's the first thing that you have to understand. And you also have to understand that because of that, line of sight really will kind of play into effect. It plays into effect in the scope of you have to get out of your own line of sight head, because a lot of people seem to construe the two together. Line of sight just determines whether or not you can see a model, not whether or not a model has cover. So right. that's an important thing, because and this does not have true line of sight either. So it's another thing that you have to get out of your head too, because most games that have line of sight require you have an actual line of sight.
Right. It kind of goes against everything that a miniatures game player has been taught throughout their miniature gaming life. Now, to a regular casual person off the street learning this game that's never seen a miniatures game, they'll be like, oh, okay, cool.
You know what I mean? Right.
But to someone like myself who's played a myriad of different games, and to like yourself, who's played a myriad of, this is just a little bit confusing. So let me make sure I'm getting this straight, right? So you cannot be on top of a car unless you are completely on top of the car. Your entire base must be completely on it.
So yes, that's correct. A character, and this is just to be clear, this is on page 15 of the rule book. I'm not sure what page that is of the PDF.
17.
But a character, 17. A character cannot end a movement with its base partially overlapping a terrain feature. Its base must be entirely on top of or not overlapping the terrain feature to end the movement. So unless your base is completely on the terrain feature, you cannot be on it, even if you can balance your character on it.
Okay. I mean, I think that that's an important distinction and should be by the cover part of this. I think they should reference that because that's where I get confused. So like in one of the live streams with Dallas and Schick, they had Spider-Man on top of a car. And I'm like, that makes no sense. He's clearly visible. Why would you do that? He's a target now. And the reason is because he benefits from cover, standing in the middle of this car on top of everything, right in the middle of the scrum, like an asshole. Look, hey, God, there's Spider-Man. Woo-woo, look my webs.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like how that happens, yeah.
I mean, that's what I think of, you know, flip, 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 you know.
Yeah, no, that's how I see it too. And the interesting thing is because it really can get really confusing when you're talking about throwing stuff too, which we're going to go over in just a second. But
right.
that's how this stuff can really get confusing, because if you're throwing terrain that a character's on, well, that terrain's no longer there, but nothing happens to the character. So
right,
it could really start to escalate in terms of suspending belief. But a lot of that you have to realize as players of this game is that this game is built around cinematic moments, not on convoluted rules. And a lot of times with miniature games, for throwing and falling off of terrain, things of that nature, they tend to really bloat the rules without really any added benefit to the game.
They do. So just to bring it back to cover real quick. So the first bullet point must be within range one of a terrain feature of the same size or larger. And if they are on top of it, they must be completely on top of it.
Yep, that's the only confusion that you're going to have with that first bullet point, I think.
So the second bullet point.
This can also be confusing because a line that can be drawn from any portion of the attacker's base can also include a line that's behind the character, not necessarily the way they're facing.
Exactly.
Which can make it confusing as well, because then that means that there's never going to be any such line that you can draw from a character who's on a piece of terrain to a character who's off that piece of terrain that doesn't allow that character to have cover unless they're above them.
Well, now, even if they're above them in this game, it doesn't matter.
Well, no. Well, I mean, it doesn't.
Like, you can have a character on a size 4 or 5 building, conceivably, in the middle of that building, and they can, and this goes back to the confusion of between line of sight or cover, and both the player on the ground, the character on the ground, and the character on top can see one another and therefore shoot one another. The one on top gets cover, the one on bottom does not. Depending on where they are.
Right. Well, yeah, and it's funny because if you're on a size 2 building and your opponent's on a size 5 building and they're shooting down onto the size 2 building, the guy on the size 2 building still gets cover because you're shooting through the terrain feature.
Right.
Because they're in the terrain feature. So you're always going to have cover.
Right. I think the way that I think I've reconciled all these line of sights and covers and stuff in my head is everything is on a horizontal plane in this game. There's no vertical measurement. It's all horizontal right. measurements. You know, and I think that's a good way to think about it. But let's go back to...
I agree with you. I think it's an easier, if simplistic, way to look at the rules to make it a little more easy to reconcile them in your mind when they don't seem to make sense.
Exactly. Horizontal plane, baby. It's just where I like to be.
And then the third rule, I think, is the of cover is the least difficult to interpret rule.
It
is. It's so obvious that it shouldn't really need to be said. But as long as you're within range two of that defender doesn't get cover.
Right. But I want to go back to the second bullet point real quick. One of the things that I think can confuse people. So the first and second bullet points are dependent on one another, because defender must be within range one of a terrain feature of the same size or larger, right? So that, you know, Hulk does not get cover from a light post that's size one. The second bullet point says that a straight line can be drawn from the attacker's base to the defender's base through that terrain feature. That terrain feature is referencing the one from the first one. So, like, for instance, if you have a character that is attacking and they are behind a light post, and you have another character that the defender is not behind the light post, like not within an inch of the light post, not within range one of the light post, but the attacker is, and the line can be drawn through that light post, the defender doesn't get cover. You know, a lot of times, again, in miniatures games and a lot of games in general, if there's an intervening piece of terrain, cover is given. In this case, it is not. So I think that that's an important distinction. Don't you?
Yeah, no, I think it is. If you're coming from War Machine and Hordes, that's not something that's ever going to worry you, because in War Machine and Hordes, you have to be within an inch of an obstruction or a piece of cover to get cover. So it's not something you're going to be unused to, but like for a Legion, you could have been anywhere on the other side of like a wall and still get the benefit of that wall.
Right. So moving on. Hopefully you're I really confused.
Well, yeah. And you shouldn't be, because it's really simple. Any terrain feature within means that while you're on it, you're always within that terrain feature and you're always going to have cover. Simple. Just remember that.
Right.
Unless you're within range two of the attacker. It's the only time that you're never going to have it if you're on a terrain feature.
Okay. I think that maybe somewhat settles it.
the next rules are a little bit more confusing, because throws can always be confusing. It doesn't matter where it's coming from in a miniature game. And even here, as simplistic as the rules are, because it's covered in two separate spots in the book, it can also be confusing.
Right. So we've got throwing terrain features and then throwing characters. Which one do you want to do first, Greg?
Let's do throwing characters, but just so you guys can follow along at home with us, throwing terrain is page 24 in the rule book, and page 17 is for throwing a character.
So 19 for character, PDF, 26 terrain, PDF.
Right. Cool. I think we should start with characters, because I think that's going to be the one that's more beneficial to you as a player more often than the terrain. So let's go with that first.
I completely agree. Now, I will say I'm not going to read this entire text like I did on the last one, because there's a lot more of it. But basically, the character performing the throw... Well, I'll start with it. I am going to read some text. The character performing the throw positions a movement tool with one end touching the thrown character. So basically, you're measuring from the thrown character. So usually an ability that has a throw also has a range on it. So if you are within range of that ability, for like instance, Webapult in Spider-Man, as we're going to talk about later, has a range. So as long as you're within range of that, you can grab a character. Doesn't matter. You don't have to roll dice as long as it's not part of an attack. So as long as that's within range. And then you position the movement tool in a straight line touching the thrown character. And then you move them along that tool until either they hit something, collide with something, or they get to the end of it. Now, the good part about throwing a character is if they hit something, they automatically take one damage, period. Right, Greg?
That's 100% correct. Well, if they collide with a terrain feature, you take one damage.
If they collide with another character, they take one damage as well, and the other character gets a dodge.
Yes, that's the important distinction.
Right. That's what,
and,
then
dodges will cover when we get over the terrain feature because they both use the same dodge rule.
Right. As and that is referenced in the rule book. So, but anyways, the important thing, and I think the biggest distinction between these two is where you measure from. So when you're throwing a character, you measure from the thrown character. So from the target of the throw. That's where you put your measurement tool. That's the most confusing part. So do you want to cut over to the thrown terrain now?
Well, not quite yet, because there is another a piece of information about throwing a character that I think is going to be important, especially when we're considering being on terrain like we are with cover.
Ah, yes.
If the character that you're throwing starts on a piece of terrain, you ignore that piece of terrain as intervening terrain for that throw. So, for instance, if Spider-Man's on top of a car, like he was in that Dallas versus Will game, and you throw him, he's not going to actually hit the car that he's on for collision damage.
Yeah, that is
another
important
piece of terrain.
Yep, that's an important distinction. You're right. Cool. All right, so terrain.
Yes, let's go to terrain.
Hopefully everyone is not thoroughly confused. All right, you want to take this one?
Okay, so when a character throws a terrain feature, the character's controller positions the movement tool with one end touching the character performing the throw. That means that you have to be within range of the throw for that terrain feature. And then you measure from the character. Key feature of throwing a terrain. Do not use the pivot point on the movement tool. It must be straight. That's the other key piece of information from.
But
it
I like
well.
It when it's not straight.
That's a lie. Now, the first terrain feature or character that is contacted or overlapped by the movement tool suffers the effect of a collision with the thrown terrain feature. Ignore, again, any terrain the following character or the throwing character is overlapping when determining collisions.
Yes, that is the rule. Explain that shit.
I don't know the confusing part of this because it makes sense. So what part of that is unclear to you?
Nothing. I just figured I'd see what you came up with. So basically, the way I read that, this is the way I read it. So it says position the tool touching the character that is doing the throw.
Right.
So
the key thing to think about with that is that if the character is behind or in front of the terrain feature, as long as it's within range, that terrain feature is going to go over them.
Right, exactly. And that's an important note, I think, is... Yeah, that. I mean, shit, like, that's just kind of it, man. You know?
Yeah. No, you're right. It's super easy. It's easier to think about than I think when you throw the character. The only other thing that you have to think about when you're throwing a terrain feature is that when you've thrown it, it is destroyed completely. If there's no persistent terrain, that's at the end result of the throw.
Yes. So, and then another thing is if someone's on top of that, they just fall straight down to the bottom, no damage, no nothing. But they ignore that terrain for the purposes of being hit. And that's another thing. You have to be in range. Like that's so if you're on one end of a building and somebody else is on another end of a building, but the range, the movement tool that it says, you know, throw it medium or throw it range 4 or whatever, if that's not touching the character that you're targeting with that throw, then it's not going to hit them.
Correct.
Like, so for instance, if you have Hulk and Iron Man both on top of a size 3 building, I don't think Iron Man can throw things, but let's just say he can. So you have both of them on size 3. If Hulk were to want to pick up that building and throw it at Iron Man, he couldn't because they are both on that same piece of terrain and would ignore it for the purposes of a throw.
So when with your example of Hulk and Iron Man are both on the building, the only person who ignores it for the purpose of collision is the thrower.
So Iron Man could still get hit by the building he's standing on?
Yes.
That's confusing now.
So the difference is that because...
Well, like, so I'm imagining, like, the thematic element of that is Hulk is, like, grabbing the build, like, jumping up off the building, like, grabbing it, somersaulting it, and swinging it. You know, like, it's ridiculous.
Well, right, yeah. And the worst part is because Iron Man's staying there, you have to assume then that he's either played baseball bat with Tony Stark's armor, or he's literally just scooping up the whole building while they're both on it, or Hulk smashing it
until something weird happens in on it. So, okay, so I was wrong. Exactly. Ignore that earlier part.
Yeah, yeah. Generally, ignore Will when it comes to rules.
Look, I just—it's almost 2 a.m. here, so yeah, ignore me.
No, no, it's fair enough. It's because throwing is very confusing if you've never had to deal with it before in a game. And as you and I have talked about up until recently, throws maybe weren't at the top of your list as something that you would ever consider doing in a game.
Right, and so, I will say, you know, talking about these things here, we can talk about dodging. I think we're running a little long on time, but dodging, basically, you just get a chance to miss some damage, essentially, if you want to look at it like that. We can cover dodging. Let's cover it now.
Yeah, there's not a lot of extra stuff as far as dodging is concerned. When a terrain feature or another character collides with a character, there's a chance for the non-thrown character to dodge out of the way to avoid some or even all of the damage. To do this, the character rolls dice equal to its physical defense. And then you add an additional die to the dodge roll for each critical in the initial roll, and then apply any dice modifications from special rules and effects, like spider sense, I think, is one of those rules.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think we also need to make sure we put the emphasis on is the fact that when you throw a terrain feature or when you throw a character, when they are thrown, you add 1 to their size.
Yep.
It is size value plus 1. So, and that's actually not covered in throwing a character. It's not covered in throwing terrain. You know where that's covered? Dodging.
That is true, that which makes it even harder.
Right.
But the character takes damage equal to the size of the terrain feature or thrown character plus 1, reduced by 1 for each critical, wild, or block.
Yep. There you go. So that's
dodging and taking damage.
Yep. Either way, I think that if you know you need to do damage, like if you're like, I need to do this 1 damage on this guy, I think throwing the character is better. But if you are just going for a hit, like you just want to move some terrain off the board, maybe not let it be thrown at you, maybe not make it to where you can be thrown into it, then throwing it at the other character is a good call too. Because like average defense is 3, I think. That would probably be what most characters are average in their defensive stats. We've got Captain America, who's a 4, who can boost it with Vibranium Shield, but you know, a high physical defense would be 4 or 5. I don't think we've seen a 5 yet, but a 4 would be a high physical defense. So if you're throwing a size 3 building, it becomes 4 in the throw, and then there's a non-zero chance that all of that gets blocked, or at least most of it. So, you know, I think the better option is probably to throw the character into the terrain or into another character. That I think is really where the money is.
I think that's a good hot take. I mean, I think you're going to see me, if you're playing against me, you're probably not going to see me throw specifically for the damage purposes. Most of the time it's because the characters I'm bringing need to get around some of that cover that you're trying to overuse. And so I'm going to want to destroy as much of that as possible.
Right.
Or exactly. Let's say I need to get to an objective and I have a character that can only climb, but I have another character who can destroy it.
Exactly.
So it makes it easier.
Okay. So speaking of making things easy, your mom.
Right, yeah. No, that's fair. I think of
that sounds like, have you been having some drinks tonight? You've been having a couple?
You know, I had a couple of drinks tonight, but it was all water. I wish there was alcohol involved in this tonight, but I think it's just that it's because it's later than we normally do this.
It's true.
You know what you're not delusional about? You're not delusional about those awesome miniatures that are coming out for Spider-Man, right?
So let's talk about what his miniature looks like. I am not in love with this sculpt. Like, I like that he's got the web shooter hand out there, but I would have rather the terrain behind him been a full wall and he was like holding onto the wall.
Yeah, I would have gladly paid an extra $10 for the core set if he was holding onto better terrain. Than what he is, or his classical crawl pose. If he was a classical crawl pose, I'd be fine with that too. I don't hate it. I still think he's fantastic. It's just what he's against that's really irking me.
Well, that's the thing. Like, just put him on the ground at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I'm spinning it around as we're talking.
Same.
And it's just like the only, like, when I can say the only angle that I like him from is the side. And
that's because you like looking at his butt.
You know, Captain America has America's ass. That's all I'm going to say.
So, speaking of America's ass, like, if you look at his sculpt and then look at Black Widow, there's an, like, other than the fact that his legs are up off the ground and hers are on the ground, not too different.
It's fair.
I'm just saying, like, look, I love most of what they've done with this game, sculpting wise. This is one that feels kind of falls flat for me.
Yeah, especially if you've had a chance to see the Miles Morales version.
Oh, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was just about to say that.
And he's probably not my favorite, but he's certainly in my top 10 of spoiled sculpts that we have for this game. And it seems like such a miss for Spider-Man. Like, he is the highest selling character, single character of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
And you'd think that it would have had a little bit more of a wow factor with him.
One would think. Anyways, what are you going to paint him like?
You know, look, this is really difficult for me to say because I think this is the only character I've felt this way about so far, and that's including Crossbones, which is probably one of the least favorite characters that most people have in the Marvel Universe. I don't know that I really want to paint him.
What?
Yeah, I don't know that I would ever want to see him painted, and it's all because of the sculpt, because I can't feel inspired to paint him in a certain fashion. It would probably just be studio scheme, like his normal traditional blue and reds.
I gotcha.
Just because there's nothing inspirational to me about it. And guys, this isn't me knocking the game in any way, shape, or form. I love what you guys have put out so far as rules and the sculpt pictures. This one's just, this is the antithesis of a sculpt for me that does anything for me.
I agree. Yeah. I don't like the sculpt either. With that being said, I'm going to paint him up like the Sony Spider-Man video game with that white, with the big, like the white and the white accents. I think that's really cool looking.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's a good idea. That might make me a little bit happier about it. If I had to do anything to make me happier with him, I might go Deathlock Spider-Man.
Oh.
Revenge of the Sinister Six.
Wow, that's bold. That's a bold choice.
That's a Rob Liefeld choice.
So you're going to make sure you don't paint his feet?
Yeah, they're going to be completely gone.
Right.
But I really liked that cool little cyborg arm that he had and all the pouches. It would at least inspire me to paint him.
Yeah, you could. I think another a good opportunity in this with this sculpt would be a black suit Spider-Man.
Sure.
I think you could make that work really well with this.
Yeah, I think you could also do the silver suit Spider-Man where you had the silver armor.
Yeah,
spider armor.
Yeah.
This one lends itself to that a little bit too.
It does.
But again, if they come out with another Peter Parker, I'm going to probably jump all over it. But
we'll
and
see.
I really hate to give any kind of credit to Knight's models, but I really definitely like the Spider-Man.
Oh yeah. Some of their sculpts I did not like at all. Their Spider-Man was nice.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Yeah, and again, there's nothing wrong with this one. It's just my least favorite of all of them.
I'm down with that. So moving on to his stat card, we have...
No, I really want to beat the dead horse. We need to keep talking about how bad this... No, I'm just...
Well, when everybody turns us off because we're running long as crap, that'll be your fault. Anyways.
That's okay. You can cut that out.
No cutting for you. Spider-Man, Peter Parker is his alter ego. Stamina, 5... He has a movement range of long. He is size 2. Here's an interesting one. He's threat 4.
Yep.
His physical defense is 3. His energy defense is 3. And his mystic defense is 3. What stands out to you on that?
I think the easy thing that stands out to me is the fact that he's movement long. He's one of the few characters that's movement long. It makes sense. It's iconic.
Exactly.
But everything on his card makes sense, but I really like the fact that they kept him mobile.
Oh, yeah, 100%. For me, that and the fact that he's threat four. Like, I get that Spider-Man is a BFD within the larger framework of the Marvel Universe, but I do not see him as the same power level as Captain Marvel or Ultron. I just don't. Like, to me...
You know, it's easy to say that, but he's gone toe-to-toe with the Hulk.
Sure, in a sense. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And again, we've done this a few times. Maybe that's more like threat level within the context of the abilities they've given him in the game. So maybe it makes sense once we get into this card. But for right now, just looking at it, you know, I'm just like, man, how is he threat four? Like, threat three would seem a little bit more in line with what I would expect. Anyways, sure. Let's go on to his abilities.
Yeah, he's got some iconic abilities, but ones I wasn't expecting too. So he will start off with the strike. It's range 2, it's strength 5, 0 power. It's a standard strike. He gets power equal to the amount of damage it's dealt. It is physical. No standout there other than the fact that strength 5, that's pretty high.
That's not a bad strike, yeah.
No. And then his next ability is Impact Webbing, which is range 4. It's strength 4. It's 0 power again. And then after the attack is resolved, he gains 1 power. Mm-hmm. And it also, this is the key though, it has a wild push. If the target character is size 2 or less before damage is dealt, the character may push it short away.
Right. So as of right now, the only characters that would not affect would be Ultron, Hulk, and MODOK.
Right. So it's important.
Yep. Continue with the last one, and then we'll break these down.
Yeah, and then the last one is Taser Web, which is an energy attack. It's range 3. It's strength 6, power 2. And then if the attack deals 1 damage or more after it is resolved, the target character gains the stun special condition, which is?
The stun special condition is if an effect would cause the character to gain more than 1 power, it gains only 1 power instead. So in other words, if you stun Hulk, he would takes damage. Say he takes 3 damage. He actually only gains 1 power instead of 3. There you go.
Yep. So if you can stagger and stun the Hulk, then chances are they're going to shake both of those because he does not want to be staggered and
no
stunned.
No joke.
And, you know, and that was actually... out of all the abilities that you could give Spider-Man, like you know, he doesn't have a web up, you know, where he can web somebody up and hold them there or anything like that. Out of all the abilities that they could have given him, I really wasn't expecting the Taser Web because it's not a very iconic ability from the movies. So a lot of people, like, it was used, but it's not the most memorable thing if you go through all of the Spider-Man movies that they've ever done.
Yeah, definitely. If you go through the movies, I mean, he uses it in the comics quite a bit, but at the same time, I'm completely with you. In that, why would you give him Taser Webs? Because if you've already said that you're bringing out Miles Morales has Venom Strike, which is a physical version of the Taser Web, which I guarantee you when we see his card, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, I feel like that's a missed opportunity, you know? I mean, that could end up being two different missed opportunities on two different Spider-Men.
Right, and I think that like you said, a web up where somebody ends up, you know, you could still stun them or give them a stagger or something like that. Like, I think that would have been a more thematic choice, but I'm okay with this because I still think it's interesting. The thing that stands out...
It's a good rule.
It is a good rule. The thing that stands out with these attacks, though, is that he has 2 attacks that generate power, or, you know, that generate power. The strike is equal to the damage dealt, but his impact webbing, he gains 1 power for doing impact webbing, and it's range 4. I think that's really good.
Yeah, it is, especially if you consider that if he just uses that one and you go with the power that you go just for activating on a turn, he's going to have 2 power to do a taser web on the next turn, and chances are he's going to be in range to do it.
Exactly.
Which is pretty cool. So, I mean, he doesn't ever have to take damage to be effective.
Exactly.
Which is different than a lot of other characters.
Exactly. So, moving on to his superpowers now, we have an active ability called Webline. It is 2 power, and it says, push an enemy character within range 4 toward this character short. A character may be pushed by the superpower only once per turn. So in other words, you get to bring someone closer to you. And the way that pushes toward things work is interesting. You take one of the movement templates and you put an angle in it to where it's a 90-degree angle, and you put it in a V behind them, and then you can put the, as long as the distance is being lessened, you can move them in any direction within that little V that's created, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I like the movement toggle. I mean, if for no other reason, the movement tool is perfect because it actually visualizes the actual towards rule that a lot of miniature games have, but have a really hard time explaining.
Exactly. So his next one is an active ability called Webapult, which is choose an interactive terrain feature or an enemy character, both of size 2 or less, and within range 3, and throw it short. The superpower can be used only once per turn. This is a 3-power ability. I don't think I said that. So it's 3-power. It's another throw, which is good. And like we said earlier, it can affect anyone in the game except for 3 characters that we know of right now. So I think that's good.
As we've talked about with Ultron, a size 2 throw really isn't that powerful. So it's going to have to look at tactical applications more than damaging applications, I think.
Completely agree. Completely agree. It's going to be in a situational thing. I don't think that's really what you're going to be doing with Spider-Man more often than not.
No, which again, I think is another missed opportunity. And this could have been one of those ways that they could have really made him worth that four threat. But again, he's also a really versatile character, so maybe I'm just off base and we should just continue talking about his superpowers.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we'll talk about it here in a second. So his next ability is an innate ability called Spider Sense, or Peter Tingle, if you watched the new movie. It's Spider Sense on the card, but I might pencil in Peter Tingle because that's just hilarious. When this character is defending against a physical or energy attack or making a dodge roll, it may re-roll 2 of its defense or dodge dice. So that's really useful.
Yeah.
Rerolls are always good in dice games. Always good. So survivability.
Yeah. Agreed.
And then his last ability is called Wall Crawler. It's an innate ability. He has it all the time, and that is, when placing the movement tool during an advance, this character counts as size 5. So in other words, like we talked about with flight, there's no penalty. So if you place a movement tool and it would make you climb up something that is size bigger than you are, you have to use the short movement tool. Well, this allows you to ignore that rule, essentially.
Yeah, and he's, one of only 2 characters, I think, that have wall crawl? There's not very many characters that have flight in the core set. So
yeah, there's 2 that have flight and 2 that have wall crawl.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's Spider-Man, guys.
I mean,
what do you think, Will?
I think that he is, like you said, just some missed opportunities here with Spider-Man. I think he's a good character. I think he is an objective holder character. If you want my honest opinion, I think he's the kind of character that you're going to want to move to an Extremis console or to one of those gamma shelters because he has that survivability with Spider Sense, but he's not going to really be putting any hurt out. Taser Web is his highest strength attack, and it's a good attack. It really is, but at the same time, it's like, man, is it really worth it trying to spend 2 power to do all that damage? And then, that's the only thing I would want to spend power on, because I think Webline is good, not great, but Webapult, I just don't see myself using that very often at all.
No, and again, I think this might just be an experience on the table thing. I could see, in the context of an objective holder, why any one of those abilities are actually going to be really good, because he's able to keep other people away from him as part of his activation to get those objectives and run away. Which is really cool, because you don't want to use an action necessarily if you're holding an objective
right,
to get away. But you could, move up, grab the objective, and then Webapult somebody away, and then walk the other direction, and now you're probably out of range of whatever they're going to do reprisal-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So, I could see that, and I see that then he's probably a really good objective holder, and I get why they designed him the way he did, or why they did. But I still feel like there's iconic missed opportunities. Like there's ways that you can make him feel more like a Spider-Man.
Right. And I think that this is, so I played a lot of the legendary deck building game, Marvel deck, legendary deck building game. And more often than not in that game, Spider-Man felt underpowered as well. And while he's threat four in this game, he does not feel like threat four when we read these abilities, to me.
No, and I think that's because maybe we're not looking at it in the total picture. And the more I started to think about the objective thing when you brought that up, the more I think that's what he's designed around. And since objectives are king, a higher threat ability could show his ability to hold down those objectives, and it would make more sense in that context. But we actually have to get him on the table and really try that out.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to play an objective game yet.
Yeah, this is one, honestly, where my hot take is hot garbage.
So I think he looks garbage. You think he looks garbage to play.
Right. I mean, I don't know. Look, and this is not I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing the design team or anything like that. This is literally having not actually played the game. We can all be couch coaches. But once the game's out there and once I see kind of how he does things, I'll probably have a different perspective on it. But right now, I'm just like, I don't know if I can afford you for my team.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. I could see that easily.
You know what I mean?
Like maybe it's just because we don't have like a Spider-Verse theme yet or affiliation.
It's going to happen.
That gives us the incentive.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm underwhelmed right now.
You're whelmed.
Yeah, I would just be whelmed. And speaking of Spider-Man, you know what he uses to get that web fluid out of his crotch? It's Dr. Squatch. That's right. He uses their soap to remove web fluid from places it's not wanted. And we're here at House Party Protocol to tell you guys, as we've told you before, House Party 15 is your promo code for some Dr. Squatch soap. They just came out with 4 new soap bundles. So me and Greg both been telling y'all about the Squatch Starter Bundle. Well, they have 4 different starter bundles now. I still like my favorite. It's Forest. It's Pine Tar, Gold Moss Scrub, and Cedar Citrus. But they have more. They have the Squatch, the Beach, and the Fresh. And guess what, guys? I just ordered the Shampoo and Conditioner bundle, too. So I'll be able to let you know how that stuff is when it gets here. Greg, what about you?
I'm definitely going for Fresh. And, you know, a little bit of a crisp IPA tang.
A little bit of crisp IPA tang. I like it. Yeah, guys, drsquatch.com. House Party 15, get you 15% off your order. You're going to love this stuff. We've already had a couple of people that we know reach out and get it. So enjoy it. House Party 15, drsquatch.com. Get yourself smelling good. Get your hair right. Get your body right. Do your mind right. Life is good. Moving on.
I think one of the best things about Spider-Man is his villains. So, I mean, I'm okay with his villains outshining him. And I think based off of the live stream and his card itself, I think Dr. Octopus is a better character. So let's just talk about him.
Yeah. So we have Doc Ock. So let's talk about his miniature for a second. And
yeah,
whew, it's another one I love. Love
yeah, I
what
agree.
They did here.
Yeah. Go ahead. Keep telling me more.
So he's got his arms crossed in a very menacing look, and he's smiling, which I love. And I love that they have the goggles on him, you know, he's got like the goggles, his arms are crossed, he's smiling like he knows he's about to kick some ass. And then his octopus tentacles are around him, and they're not like all in one uniform kind of position. A couple of them are kind of open, a couple of them are more kind of closed, and they're in different positions. And I love it. And I think that the only thing that you could have done differently with this model would have been to put 2 of the tentacles down on the ground and then lifting him up. Like that would have been your contact point with the thing, and then 2 of the tentacles pointing out. But I actually really, really love that they pointed all 4 of the tentacles out, and he's just standing there like, yeah, I'm about to wreck you.
Yeah, I mean,
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think he's one of my favorite models. He's definitely, I think I like him more than Ultron. It's really close between the two.
Nah,
it's
still Ultron
right
for me,
behind
but
Captain Marvel.
Yeah, still Ultron for me.
It's okay. You're allowed to be wrong. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right, right. And you're allowed to be wrong about Captain Marvel So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. But I really do like him, and if Alfred Molina would have worn this in Spider-Man 2, I probably would have liked the movie a lot better than I did, just because it is iconic and he's not wearing a trench coat and doesn't look ridiculous, even though Dr. Ock does occasionally wear a trench coat in the comics. It's just, right. This is so iconic. I love the iconic outfit that they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is more of like a throw out to the animated stuff and maybe the Ultimates, because I don't remember what the Ultimates looks like, but it's definitely a throw out to the animated. And I'm just so happy about it.
It feels very much like that animated show. Like, it's not 100% like that, but it's very reminiscent. And I love that they blended kind of that old school green jumpsuit with that more armory look that he had in the animated show. Love it.
Yeah, I like it too. I don't know what I could say enough about this sculpt. Dallas, you did a good job directing this one. Whoever sculpted it, you are fantastic. I love you. You can sculpt a mini for me anytime.
That's right, exactly. And I'm going to be painting this one up just like the comic, or just like the TV show.
You know, that's a good choice. I don't think that there's any wrong way that you can paint him up, but I will say that when I paint him up, he's probably going to be studio colors, because I think there's just nothing about that model that I can critique to say that I don't like, other than like what you said, his arms aren't down to lift him up off the ground, which I think is probably a reasonable conversion to do without very much effort.
I agree. I completely agree. I don't think it'd be too hard at all. You just kind of do the old hot water trick, bend him, and then put him down. I mean, I don't think it'd be difficult at all.
No.
So guys, we know you're going to need paints for those brand new Marvel Crisis Protocol miniatures, and there's no better paints than War Colors. They are great paints, give great coverage, they thin down really wonderfully. You can click our link in the description or on our Facebook page. We have a link up there. Get yourself some great paints. You'll love them. You won't regret it. That's all we can say. Don't have a discount code on this one, but that's okay, because these paints are amazing.
It's true. They're going to be your one-stop cin shop for all things paint, paintbrush, and accessories.
And now we're moving on.
You know, and I'm sorry, I do want to pause real quick and do say that, because we forgot to say anything about it, I don't think that Spider-Man switches anything when he gets flipped over.
He does not. It's the same.
Okay, good. Then let's continue talking about Dr. Octopus. I'm sorry.
So, Dr. Octopus, Otto Octavius, Doc Ock, on his card, his first stat line is his stamina is 5. His movement range is medium. He is size 2. Threat 3. He has physical defense of 4. Energy defense of 3. Mental defense of 4. What stands out to you on that one?
It's tough. I mean, it's weird that he has a higher physical defense than a lot of the other characters, but I assume that has something to do with his arms more than anything else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because he's also really healthy, too.
He's a hardy guy.
Yeah, a lot more hardy than I would have expected, especially with his mystic defense and mental defense. I didn't think he was psychic in any way, and I definitely didn't think he had any kind of magic abilities, so I don't know where that comes from.
I think it comes from the fact that he's a genius.
Okay, that makes sense.
But, yeah. So, I think that just his defenses are high overall. Like, I feel like high. I mean, it's actually kind of in line with everybody else, but at the same time, high. It feels high.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, I feel like you should be 3s all the way around, if anything. But
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'd have to see him on the table. But yeah, I like those abilities. I think I was really surprised to see him be as statted as he is.
Yep. So let's go with his first abilities. What you got, Greg?
So his first ability is Strike. It's range 3, strength 4, power 0. Like most other strikes, he gains power equal to the damage dealt. But he's also got a fantastic wild ability too, though. And when making his attack, each wild in the attack roll counts as 2 successes.
Oh, so good.
That's so good. Especially when you couple it with crits. Yeah.
And the fact, like, so he's only going to roll 4 dice, so that's not great. But then if any wilds, it automatically becomes another hit. That's so good.
Yeah, and it's surprisingly good. Like, I mean, because if you take into effect crits and wilds and hits, I mean, half the die is going to be wrecking someone's world. And then his next ability is, and that is a physical ability. His next ability is an energy attack. It's arm lasers, which is range 4, strength 6, power 3. The attack ignores a Larna site, and the defending character does not benefit cover, which, as we've already explained before in previous episodes, that's big. Additionally, he's also got a Wild Pierce, which allows you to change one of the defending character's hits, blocks, and wilds into a black.
It's a crit.
Right?
Or is it crit? Crit, block, and wild.
Yeah, because hits do nothing. Crit, block, and wild to a blank, which huge.
Yep. So, hey, Spider-Man, you got one of those successes and you re-rolled it to make it more successful? No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
It's just good.
Well, yeah, and it is, which is another reason why it surprised me to see his dice really crap him out on the live stream. Poor Will.
Oh, I know. Like, on the live stream, he used arm lasers 3 times and couldn't do jack with it, and it's such a good attack.
Well, that's what happens sometimes. Your dice just crap all over you, and you need to learn to roll better.
Some people are into that. I'm not, but some people are.
Yeah, they don't call you the scat man. That's all about me, I guess. No,
skibbity-dim-dim-bada-boop.
No, thank you for catching the drop.
Yes. Oh, dude, I was all about some scat man back in the day.
Oh, man.
So
enough about shit. Let's talk about his abilities.
Let's talk about his superpowers. Or do you want to talk about his abilities more?
You know, no. I mean, they're not standouts by any stretch of the imagination, but I feel like he's going to do more work than he seems like he's going to do, because they're both all about doing more damage.
I think he's going to do more than his 3-threat worth of job. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, he's 3-threat, Spider-Man's 4-threat, and the only difference being that Spider-Man has 3 abilities and 4 superpowers. Doc Ock has 2 abilities and 3 superpowers. Like, that's the only difference. So
that's fair.
Anyways, his first superpower is an active ability called Ox Clutches, and this is 3 power. Choose an interactive terrain feature or enemy character, both of size 2 or less, so both of size 2 or less, and within range 3, and throw it short. The superpower can be used only once per turn. So much like we talked about with Spider-Man, it's not really going to be super useful to throw with a size 2, but if you need to clear some space, it'll be useful. His next ability is called, it's an innate ability called Scientific Hubris. Whenever this character rolls dice, after the effect is resolved, it gains 1 power if it rolled at least 1 crit. So anytime you roll crits, you're going to get an extra power, which is really good, I think.
Yep. Yeah, and then, defense or offense.
Exactly. So then his last innate ability is Wall Crawler, which, as we saw before, just allows you to ignore the movement penalty for going to stuff that's a bigger size than you.
What do you think? Will there any standouts on his superpowers?
You know, honestly, Scientific Hubris is good, but there's nothing that's like blowing. There's nothing that blows me away on his superpowers. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
They're okay. They're in line, but what really his standouts are his abilities, his strike and his arm lasers. Those are to me his standouts on this card.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think I like the most about him is that he has more of a focus than Spider-Man. Again, I think that's why his threat level is lower, but he's got more of a damaging focus as opposed to a defensive focus, but he can still do some defensive stuff. But not only is he doing some defensive stuff with Scientific Hubris, I think it's actually a really good ability, because usually having a higher defense screws with your power economy because you're not generating as much as you normally would when you're not taking damage.
Yep.
But he doesn't have that ability as long as there's a crit in there, you know? He's still getting some power from it.
Still gaining some power. And I think that's what's interesting is just, I think his very focused damage, you know, he is the DPS model, like Iron Man was for the Avengers. Similar, I think, in that not super glass cannon, but at the same time, still really, you know, useful, good attacker.
Yeah, I think if you need something to fill points and you might need another Cabal guy, he might be the guy you reach for over, say, Crossbones or something.
Absolutely.
I mean, because he's got range attacks.
He can
decent
move.
Damage.
Medium.
Yeah.
And so his injured side, the only thing that changes is he actually gains 1 health.
Yeah.
Which
is goes to 6.
Interesting.
I mean, at least he changes so that there's some kind of difference. And, you know, again, we've talked about this a lot. Like, you know, this is not always going to be a change. And a lot of times it's usually just one stat point or maybe just adding like a die face to one of the rolls or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was weird to see that that would have been one of the things that he does. Like,
right.
I would have thought that they were going to give him like an ability that talks about how he monologues or something, you know.
That would be funny one day if they come out with something like that.
That would be cool. But no, I mean, I think as a character as a whole, like, I mean, I think he's really, like you said, a really good vanilla character where you can throw in if you need the extra points and you don't want to go out with an odd number of threat points.
Exactly. Exactly. I could see him being a pretty useful and like he'd be a utility piece in any roster that I have. Like, hey, like you said, I need to round up to that last three threat. I got the guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and overall, I think he's a pretty good character. I think I like both of them, and I can't wait for Ghost Spider and Miles and Venom because I just want to do a pure Spider-Verse team with all the characters that they've got right now. I hope that I'm able to do that. If I'm not, oh well. If I am, great.
Exactly. It's going to be awesome. So anyways, we've run long as shit.
True. Yeah, welcome to Crisis.
Yes.
House Party Protocol. I don't even know the name of our own podcast anymore. That's how long we ran.
That's right. So let's put a bow on this one.
Just as a reminder, guys, if you want to reach out to us, you can get to us on Discord. I'm really active there. You can reach us at House Party Protocol on Facebook. Will's super active there. And, of course, you can always reach us at our email, which is housepartyprotocolpod@gmail.com. Please make sure when you review our podcast on wherever you guys listen to that you leave a review, because it's important to help our content get out there with everybody who's looking for more Marvel Crisis Protocol.
Tell your friends. Share the links that we post on social media and stuff. We really appreciate that, and continue to reach out to us. We really love interacting with you guys. And also, don't forget about our promo codes for Dr. Squatch, House Party 15 there, and also individual items at blacksitestudio.com. House Party 15 there. Get 15% off your orders at both places. We will catch you on the flip side.